Hi everyone, Jason here. On May the 14th, Stephen and myself will be appearing with the one and only Mark Lewison at the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary, Dublin. We're going to be celebrating 60 years of A Hard Day's Night, and we would love you to join us. For tickets, go to paviliontheatre.ie or nothingisrealpod.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Nothing Is Real, a podcast about the Beatles. Everybody thinks they know the Beatles, but how much do they really know? My name is Jason Carty.
My name's Stephen Cockcroft.
And we're live on tape from Dublin, and a splendid time is guaranteed for all. Today, we've had hundreds of letters asking us to talk about a group that's not the Beatles, so we're going to talk about Wings.
And you wrote all of those letters yourself.
I wrote them all to myself. We're going to look particularly at the Wings 71 to 73 box set that came out in December 2018. And I think we're going to say from the outset, we're going to take this seriously. There's going to be no postmodern, ironic Wings where the band the Beatles could have been.
No, this is the one I've been looking forward to.
This has been somewhat contentious even before we hit the studio today. But the Wings box set that came out at the end of last year is just another one of the ongoing Paul McCartney archive collection, which in the grand tradition of MASH lasting longer than the Korean War and Allo Allo lasting longer than the Second World War, The Paul McCartney archive collection has been going on longer than Wings by this point. They are sumptuous reissues of individual albums going back to 2010, which started Band on the Run. We've had McCartney 1 and 2 in 2011, Ram in 2012, Wings Over America, Venus and Mars, Wings at the Speed of Sound, Tug of War and Pipes Peeps, and Flowers in the Dirt. And in October 2018, while Paul was still at number one in the US charts with the latest album, Egypt Station, we were promised the next round of Paul McCartney archive collections, which were Wings' debut album, Wings Wildlife, and their second album, Red Rose Speedway, which were bundled together into an even larger box set called Wings 71 to 73. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And obviously, Stephen, these are your favourite records.
It's what the people want. You've got it, Paul. You give Paul that, you give the people what they want.
Exactly. And this, I have to admit, is probably, if we're getting into the economics of it, all the Paul McCartney archive collections are very sumptuous, lovely, physical things.
I thought you were going to say overpriced, but yeah, but lovely, sumptuous, and overpriced.
Yes, and there has been some argument amongst fans, and fans are obviously the most logical and reasonable people out there, about the musical content has sometimes been a bit lacking or a bit uneven or a bit unclear.
Or a bit reworked.
Yeah, and it's not all the archive collections are created equal. So the books and the information are all fantastic, but the music is a bit up and down. And the Flowers in the Dirt was the last box set before this one, and there was a lot of people upset about there's only tracks that you could download and there wasn't tracks you could get on CD and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And McCartney's management were kind of on the defensive a bit.
I think so. I mean, I think that was a bad misstep.
Yeah.
I absolutely could not fault the physical content in terms of the books and the photographs and the archive material is just incredible across the entire output. But I think creating a physical box like that and then saying, and inside is a download card.
Yes.
And you can download some MP3s or high quality tracks. That just seemed to be a bad misstep.
Yeah. And prior to these two coming out last year, did you have a favorite? Is there one that you'd nail down as a good one?
I think in terms of content and archive sort of physical material, I like Wings Over America.
Yeah.
That was the live triple vinyl. There wasn't a lot of extra content. I mean, there was a doubling up of concert material, but I think that is just a sensational package.
I thought McCartney 2 was great musically because it had everything from the sessions in one place. So I think McCartney 2 is probably my favourite up until we get to this recent reissue. And I think it's likely to say today that we're potentially going to go long. So don't be surprised if this podcast gets split into not one, but two Wings podcasts.
Which, you know, again, we're giving the people
what they don't want.
What they want.
So let's have a look. So this box set, the 71 to 73 box set, was a limited edition, as I said, of the Wildlife and the Red Rose Speedway box set, limited to 3,000 copies and priced, as you say, quite overpriced. At €360, which I think is the most expensive thing I've ever bought to put on my shelves. I don't know about you.
Yes, I would say that's probably correct. That's
probably getting there.
And I still don't know why I bought it. But anyway.
Well, I see. Here's where we're going to get fun, because Wildlife, I will defend to the ends of the earth, as a fantastic record. But I did have a conversation with somebody. There was a music fan at work, and I was chatting to him. And I said, I bought a very expensive Paul McCartney box set last night. And he was like, how much? And I said, £360. And he said, well, it's his complete albums. And I was like, nope. He said, is it all their way? I said, it's a Wings box set. And he was like, it's all of Wings' albums. And I'm like, nope, it's two Wings albums and a load of other tat, quite frankly.
Did they stage an intervention at that point?
At that point, yes, they got out.
They backed away.
They backed away. They sedated me. They put me into a quiet room and then took it from there. But let's break this down into a couple of different parts, and let's, for a start, approach Wings Wildlife. Now, Wings Wildlife is the debut album from Wings, and it's released in late 1971. And where would you say Paul was at when Wings appeared?
When Wings appeared? Well, he'd come off the back of two solo albums. So the first one, McCartney, was very much a homemade affair, very stripped down. The second one, Ram, sort of a reaction to the McCartney not really performing that well, or not being really a big critical success. You know, he's off in New York. He's got the New York Philharmonic. They're adding strings. George Martin's doing string arrangements for him. A lot of effort put into that album, and again, critical failure. Commercially quite successful, number one single in America. But he's just not getting the critical acclaim that his bandmates, particularly John and George, were getting. So this seems to me to be a reaction against that. He picks up, for me, he's picking up on the Get Back, Let It Be, Strip Down, Back to Basics, do the show right here kind of vibe. He's got the drummer from the Ram sessions, Denny Sywell. He's got Denny Lane, former Moody Blues, who's been kicking around since he left the Moody Blues, not doing really very much. Mm-hmm. And Linda.
Yes. And you'd agree with me when I say that Wildlife is his best album.
I would not agree that Wildlife is the best album.
Okay, so let's Wildlife has this reputation as a record. So it's his third
It's a record.
Album.
I will give you that. It is a record.
It does.
It,
you
it
can
does,
buy
you
it.
Can buy
it does make a noise.
It is a record.
But it's his third kind of solo project. It's his first Wings project. And it has this reputation of being poor. Is that a reasonable thing to say?
I think that's a reasonable.
When I experienced Wildlife, I bought it in the late 90s. And it was probably one of the last McCartney CDs I got around to buying, purely because its reputation was bad. And at that point, you couldn't try an album on Spotify or whatnot. And when I bought it and put it on, I thought, this album is sensational. It's got a sound, it's got an attitude, it's got none of, you know, it's got none of that kind of cutesy pie stuff that Paul sort of overthinks things. It's very direct. It's got a fantastic Alan Parsons engineered sound to it. I couldn't figure out why this album had such bad press. And I would even go as far to say that it is the album that helps you understand solo Paul McCartney.
I don't agree with any of that.
Okay, well then I expect a point-by-point rebuttal, Stephen, if you could.
I'm quite happy
to
do
that. How did you experience Wildlife first?
Wildlife, I think, I honestly couldn't tell you where it slots in, when I bought it. I know that the vinyl copy that I bought was an original pressing, but I didn't go out searching for an original pressing, but so it was still languishing on the shelves. I would guess it was probably 78, 79.
Yeah.
At a time I was sort of, I got all the Beatles records. I'm working my way through the solo records. I'm pretty certain I'd heard Band on the Run, mm-hmm. and that would have been the album solo album that I heard immediately before hearing Wildlife. So I'll concede that I was comparing it with what is generally regarded to be his best, or Wings' best, album. But I think it's the rough and ready, thrown together, underproduced aspect to it that really I just find incredibly off-putting.
Mm. You see, this leads to one of my big theories about solo Paul. You know I love a good theory.
Yeah.
Which is that solo Paul is best experienced in retrospect. So when I think about the Beatles, I think it must have been amazing to have listened to all those records as they were coming out in the 60s. What are they going to do next? Yeah. What are they going to do next? Oh my gosh, this is fantastic. And solo Paul is kind of a different thing. So solo Paul, I think, is better enjoyed now because there's this big, massive soup of albums that you can just dip into. And you don't have to get uptight about Ram or Wildlife because you're not in 1971 as a hard done by Beatles fan who thinks this is the guy who split up the Beatles. That you can now in 2019 look back at Paul's career and go, Ram and Wildlife are fine because all this other stuff happens and the world keeps on spinning. So you can really, Paul's career is much better enjoyed in retrospect as this big gumbo of stuff that you can have different. Today I'm in a Wildlife mood and tomorrow I'm in a,
I think I would agree with that. I think there are McCartney albums that I didn't like at the time that they were coming out that I'm able to dip back into. These first three albums were not well received critically. Ram in particular was described by Rolling Stone as the nadir of popular music. So he was absolutely reviled at the time as being the guy that split up the Beatles, which, you know, we can debate whether he was, you know, that person or not. But so he's really struggling critically. But McCartney has been, the first solo album has been rehabilitated.
Yes.
Ram is generally regarded as his best or second best album. So, that reputation does not linger and does not affect those two albums, but it absolutely continues to cling to Wildlife.
But one of these things that, like, the whole McCartney Archive Collection is trying to do is exactly that. It's trying to take these solo albums and say, these are worthy, you know, rethink everything you know is wrong. So are you trying to tell me that the Wildlife reissue has changed your mind?
It has not changed my mind. Oh, I mean, the interesting thing about most of the other albums in the archive, re-releases, are the outtakes, the live material, the studio jams and things like that. There is an absolute dearth of that on the Wildlife reissue. You know, if you went out and bought the standalone Wildlife deluxe edition, I think you'd feel pretty short-changed.
Yes.
In terms of additional material. There's some demos. There's a rough mix of the album, which really is not much different from the final.
It is quite funny that an album that's quite rough already has a rough mix.
And I think, I mean, I can understand where McCartney was. I can understand what he was trying to do. I say, I think this is a direct sort of harking back to the idea behind Get Back and Let It Be. We've got let's get back to that band.
And he talked about Bob Dylan, about he heard Dylan had recorded an album in 4 days and he wanted to record an album in 4 days.
That was New Morning.
Right.
Now, again, New Morning was hailed at the time. I think, you know, Dylan was coming off the back of Self-Portrait, which is a kind of critical, drubbing was given to that as well. So, but I don't think anyone would claim New Morning to be in Dylan's top 10 or even top 20 albums of all time. But I wonder, is Dylan really the catalyst for this? Or is this really going back to Please Please Me, to the early days of the Beatles where you could just, you know, they had a live set, you just rock up into the studio, you perform your live set pretty much live, put it to tape, put it out, move on. The difficulty with Wildlife is this is a brand new band.
Yeah.
These are four or five people in a room rehearsing songs that they don't really know.
Yeah.
They haven't played with each other. This is not a band that have honed their craft, 1,000 hours or 10,000 hours in Hamburg.
Yeah.
And these are not top flight McCartney songs.
Well, they're also, and we'll kind of break down the album, the bonus tracks in a sec, but they're also, when these songs start appearing, the band isn't necessarily a given. You know what I mean? It's him and Linda on the farm, so it's not necessarily, didn't start as a 100% band project. But just to look at the kind of the figures, Wildlife was recorded very quickly between the 25th of July and the 2nd of August 1971, and it was released on the 7th of December 1971. Wings didn't even have a name when they recorded the album. Stella McCartney was born on the 13th of September, and famously, during her difficult delivery, Paul was inspired by the name Wings to call the band Wings, and they were officially named in public on the 9th of October, Lennon's birthday. It is the last album he released in his 20s. And I think that's an amazing thing. Like, for goodness sakes, give the man some due. It's 9 years after Love Me Do. He's still in his 20s. He releases this album. And not only does he release it, he is the main person who made it possible to release this kind of album.
Pause. in what sense? In the sense of a lo-fi stripped down?
In the sense of... the artist is entitled to follow their creative muse, and the fact that the artist has done this thing makes it interesting in and of itself. Take that.
Was that not was that not Lennon in the late 60s with his experimental albums?
That's a good point. Lennon gets carried shoulder high for this kind of slapdashery.
Yeah.
And McCartney does it, and it's like, no. And to be honest, that's kind of what I like about Wildlife, because you could argue that He never did anything like this again, and he just retreated from it, or he overthought things, or he's bringing George Martin back in and he's putting on orchestras. That's not necessarily, well, there is an orchestra on this album, but that's not necessarily the Wildlife way of doing things. It's very automatic, and it's very, it's very loose.
He has seemed to have no regard for the commercial success of the album.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know whether he genuinely expected that this was going to be a huge smash album. I mean, I think it was very immediately apparent when it was released that that's not the way it was going to be received.
Yeah.
But so I don't know. It sort of goes against the whole McCartney personality that he wasn't trying for a commercial success. It certainly goes against the grain of what was happening in the charts at the time. You kind of got glam rock going on.
He certainly is a guy later in his career who makes use of the pseudonym, Fireman and Thrillington, and he's probably gotten better at signposting, and maybe he was trying to do that with Wings. I think if Wings had come out a bit more under the radar, or there was a bit more of a flair. I know it came out under the auspices of this is a quick recording by a new band, but it almost, if it had slunk into the racks and people had discovered it later on in years, like myself almost, it might have a slightly better rep.
Well, the other interesting thing is the cover itself. It doesn't have the name of the band on the cover. It's just this kind of cutesy picture of them all standing in a river with some doves, or their white
but
doves.
But you know what I never realised for years is how pregnant Linda McCartney is on the cover of that album. You can't really tell on the CD.
And he made her stand at a river.
He made her stand. I know, exactly. That's just not, she's probably just eating cheese as well. None of that's good.
But I
wait, who else was doing that? Who else was, God darn it, in a, putting their pregnant band member wife. I know this is a Rob Sheffield thought, but I mean, it's, the Stones weren't doing this.
No,
you know?
No. But putting their wives in rivers.
Putting their wives in rivers.
But you answered the question by saying by referencing Bob Dylan and New Morning.
Yeah.
So Dylan had kind of retreated. Nashville Skyline, 1969, had retreated into that kind of cozy domestic setting. Self-Portrait, New Morning. He was doing those stripped down versions that you've got the band, the basement tapes.
Yeah.
So Dylan, I think, deserves some credit for that sort of stepping off the bandwagon.
Yeah.
I don't know whether McCartney was trying to step off the bandwagon, was trying to step back on. I mean, he'd release McCartney. I think that's a kind of hybrid album. There's some little experimental things with songs like Every Night, Maybe I'm Amazed. He's clearly going for sort of something a little bit more polished.
Yeah.
Ram, incredibly polished, a lot of work into that, session men, a lot of studio time, orchestras. That doesn't work. Is this just an overreaction? Is it what I think this would be a very good bonus disc.
Okay.
So if Wildlife had never been released and they just treated that as a rehearsal.
Yeah.
Then
it was released for Record Store Day.
And it was released for Record Store. No, if this was the bonus album That came with Red Rose Speedway.
Right.
That would be, I think.
So context is everything.
I think context is everything.
Yeah.
But I'm waiting for you to make the case that these are top-notch McCartney compositions.
Well, I would say, first of all, as I said, I came to the album with the lowest of low expectations 20-odd years ago. And the first thing I really like is the sound of the thing. So it opens with Mumbo, which, for people who aren't overly familiar with it, is just a nonsensical rocking
jam,
shouting jam.
Yeah.
But the sound of it is, it sounds very close and immediate. I think if you look at the stuff that Lennon was putting out in 71 with that kind of Phil Spector kind of, you know, almost kind of stoned, glazed production, even now they're winding back on that and putting out raw mixes of Imagine. I think it just has a great sound. It's a sunshine, windows down, drive, turn it up, crank it, great feel. It feels like it feels live.
It is. I think I like the sound of it. What I don't like about it is there isn't a lyric to be heard. I mean, it's,
well, there is on the live album.
Yeah. I remember at the time listening to it. It's the first album. It kicks off the album, and you're thinking, what is this? What's he singing about? What is he?
I mean, the last thing we had heard was the exact antithesis of this. It was Backseat of My Car, the end of Ram.
Yes.
And this is literally 100% Stone Cold opposite.
Yeah, this is them just jamming in a studio. Someone switched, he said, like, take it, Tony, which is the instruction to the engineer to start the tape rolling, and they just put it out as it is. And he's just making up the words. Is that the way to start your album, where you're trying to come back after a critical drubbing?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I have looked at the track listing of Wildlife and wondered, could it have been rejigged into a, you know, I have my theories about Queen's Hot Space, that Hot Space is just a great album sequenced incorrectly.
Well, everyone's looking forward to that podcast.
That'll be another podcast. But
I think the sequencing doesn't help.
Yes.
I think the weak side is side one.
Yes.
Side two is weak, but not as weak as side one.
But that could in part be the concept of the album, that the album is literally the evolution of the band.
I think you're overthinking it.
That, you know, the album does get, as you say, the flip side is more prepared or formed than the A side.
I think you're clutching that straw is just out
wings
of reach.
Are a primordial beast kind of clambering out of the soup, and they're going onto the shore, and the B side is them standing on their own two feet.
Is there something in the water?
Well, as you go through, like, if you do look at that side one, so you've got Mumbo and then everyone's favourite, Bip-Bop.
Another song without a lyric.
Yeah, and I know Bip-Bop is like this sort of in-joke on the Steve Hoffman music forums, but
even Bip-Bop, I could kind of take that as a slightly nonsensical B-side. This is a B-side.
Yeah, not a four-minute album.
No, and this, the other thing that's wrong with this album is that every song is too long.
Yeah.
You know, there's only eight tracks, a couple of little link tracks. So there isn't enough material. The material is not well written.
Yep.
It's not well played, and it's too long. But apart from that, it's great.
Well, then you have a cover, Love is Strange, which is a great moment. And it is odd to hear solo Paul do a cover like that.
That is a redeeming song. That is the song that I think shows the band at its absolute best. It's a kind of slight reggae lilt to it. It really shows off
Linda.
Really shows off Linda. Denny Sywell's drumming was what I was going to say.
Yes, okay.
He's got that kind of reggae lilt down absolutely perfectly.
Yeah.
My understanding, this is a kind of a cover, but not quite a cover. He's making up his own lyrics. Mm. So he's you know, jamming on this. He starts doing his own lyrics. He reworks the song. This was originally going to be a single.
Yes.
But that was cancelled because the album wasn't...
Well, the album tanked.
The album tanked.
And then side one ends with the title track Wildlife, which goes on for almost 7 minutes.
Seems like longer.
But it is interesting that Paul is still a carnivore at this point, and he's writing a song about animals and animal rights. And who was doing this in 1971?
About animals or aminals?
Aminals, yes. There is that bit where he says aminals in the zoo.
You know, that's a song which is just a kind of, I don't know how many chords, not very many. Yeah. And he's just vamping away at that. And it just goes on and on. If it was a
if it was a
2 minute song, it would be okay.
Yeah.
All of these songs are pretty much kind of okay.
Yeah.
And if they were cut in half, they'd be okay.
Yeah. Well, let's have a quick look at side two, because I think side two is better. It has more formed songs, so Some People Never Know. That's a great song.
That's not bad.
I Am Your Singer.
That's a terrible song.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But then I think, which is probably the killer song, which is Tomorrow.
I will give you that. That is a good song. It's the best song on the album.
Yep.
And it's a good song all around.
So I remember when I, as I said, and I heard the song for the first time and I got to Tomorrow, I was like, how is this?
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Song not as well known as every other McCartney song. It's a glorious, yep, fantastic, well-written song. And
it's not as well known because it's tucked away on the second side of his worst album.
That will do that for
you. That will do that.
But I have another theory, which is I think you should look at Tomorrow and compare it to Yesterday. No?
Yeah.
That Yesterday, if you listen to the Beatles Yesterday, which Paul wrote, obviously, it's a very, you know, it's a story song about a situation that Paul has made up. It's imagined. But Tomorrow is a very real song about a real relationship. I have no doubt that it is exactly about Paul and Linda as a grown-up, you know, couple. It sounds adult.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of songs that cover that ground. It's not saying anything grossly sophisticated or in-depth, but it's very, very real compared, yes, to something like Yesterday, which is, you know, very well done, but it doesn't really have any kind of salt in it.
Well, I don't know. I think the problem with Yesterday is, I think, over familiarity. I think I think it's a very heartfelt song.
Yeah.
No, you think it's a bit cliched or cloying, or
It depends what you're trying to get at in 1971. And certainly, the heart of 1971 was the songwriter is telling me how he feels.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at Yesterday in the context of 1971, I think so. But no, if this album had started with Love Is Strange,
yeah,
and gone into Tomorrow,
yeah,
that would have been a great opening, couple of tracks. And I think the sequencing, the sequencing might have saved.
Yes.
You know, no one puts their worst songs at the start of the album and keeps the better stuff for the end. And Tomorrow is a song which is a great song, and it is deserving of greater recognition.
And then the album finishes with Dear Friend, which is sort of seen as the handshake of friendship to Lennon, let's put it all behind us. But the timing, does the timing fit for that?
The timing fits for it being a kind of shout out to Lennon, but not a response to How Do You Sleep, which is the song on Imagine, where he's really kind of slagging Paul off. I think this is a song that I'm not sure that this song actually features any other members of the band. It's from the Ram sessions, I'm pretty certain. So again, it doesn't fit. It sounds different. There's an orchestra.
Yeah.
But again, I like the song.
But long.
But it's long. And the orchestration is probably the most interesting thing about it. And I don't know what the key is, but it's very high.
Yeah.
As if he's kind of straining.
Yeah.
I like the song more because of it's part of that interplay back and forward between John and Paul at that time, and I like they're all writing songs about each other. But I think as a song, it's not a great way to close the album. Except he puts a little snippet of, is it Mumbo, comes at the end. You can't get enough of that wordless jam.
Yeah,
so it sticks. But it's just another very long song.
So, as you said, then, that this deluxe edition has one CD of the album, one CD of a rough mix of the album.
Which doesn't sound... Do you think it sounds markedly different?
I think it goes to show... I mean, Alan Parsons was the engineer on this record, who obviously went on to become Alan Parsons. before he sort of made Dark Side of the Moon and his own solo slash project type stuff. And you actually can sense between the two that even though Wildlife sets itself up as being very laid back with nothing happening, there is a bit of fairy dust on the tapes, and there is a bit of tightening up. And particularly for Tomorrow, there's this rather terrible backing vocal on the rough mix version, which is stripped out, where Linda's just in the background going, "Tomorrow." Very faintly, and doesn't really, it's just terrible. So there is a difference. To be honest, I'm not really going back to the rough mixes an awful lot.
Is it Some People Never Know has the peculiar sound at the end? There's some fantastic harmonies on that.
Yeah.
And that peculiar little sound at the end, is that, that is it like a kind of synth, which is somebody actually spinning a piece of pipe around
like
to make
a Bonzo Dog urban space like
that kind of noise, but so yes, there's a, there are products. So again, it kind of falls between the two things. Is it the opening track Mumbo, is it a just let's do the show right here in the studio, let's just crank up the volume and record it, or is there a little bit of studio trickery? You've got the orchestrations, it's neither one thing or the
other.
Well, it's
still an album recorded on Abbey Road.
It is, but it doesn't have a sort of constancy of sound. Is that a word? A consistency of sound. So it's a bit of a for an album that was recorded so quickly.
Yes,
it's got a kind of slight mishmash of different sounds. And
but the thing I will give Wildlife, and we'll talk about the disc of bonus tracks in a second, but it is the first album I think of his solo years that is totally divorced from the Beatles. I don't think there's a particular Beatles-sounding moment on it, and also, the first two albums were chock full of songs that were knocking around when the Beatles were still a thing. There's nothing on Wildlife that was knocking around when the Beatles were.
No, I think that's right.
Unless my timing is wrong. So it's purely, and so if you kind of get onto that disc of bonus tracks, although some of it's very rough and ready, it does sound like the sound of his head that summer. You know, he's got all these things rattling around, all these kind of fragments and tunes. And I guess your point is going to say, well, they don't really land anywhere. But maybe that's not the point.
Yeah, I think that it's just it does seem to me that if they'd taken another couple of months, rehearsed the band, worked up arrangements, the songs that work best on the album are the ones like Tomorrow, like Love Is Strange, where there is an actual arrangement. So you get the sense that some thought has gone into it. Where you know, Mumbo is just a jam, Wildlife is just to say those three or four chords, and it's just a vamp that doesn't go anywhere. I think the fragments that appear on the bonus disc do give that kind of insight.
Yeah.
And you think, well, if only they had spent a little bit more time working up those, working up arrangements, this, I think, would be a much better album.
But the bonus disc has those fragments. The bonus disc is almost like in four parts. There's like him and Linda just jamming into a tape machine.
Yeah.
Then there's him trying to get some songs together. Then there's him trying to do something with the band. And then there's the singles right at the end. And there's these little 30-second interstitials breaking up those four phases.
So it's an interesting sort of little documentary disc.
Yeah.
Of the evolution.
Yeah,
of
it's, this, it is yeah, like a yeah, documentary yeah, yeah. kind of oral thing. But Dear Friend is great on that disc.
Yes.
It's kind of, you kind of feel it land in the middle, and he's like, okay, this is something with something that I've got to
there's
get
substance,
out.
Yes, there's substance there, and
Then there's a couple of interesting things in this. On the bonus disc for Wildlife is When the Wind is Blowing, towards the end, which has an amazing afterlife as a Kanye West song.
Yes, can I hold my hand up at this point and say I haven't listened to the bonus disc of that particular track?
Well, then we have to shut this down.
I just couldn't bring myself to do that. But I know whereof
well,
you speak.
I love the story of When the Wind is Blowing. So When the Wind is Blowing is a McCartney song that has sat in the archives for years until the archive collection came out. And it was written originally. Paul told the story years ago in Parkinson that he was looking at a Van Gogh painting and there's a guy in the painting playing a guitar with two fingers, and Paul, because he's never off and he's the best one, decided, hey, what are those two fingers doing on that guitar in that painting by Van Gogh? And he got a guitar and he tried to play this chord, and he played this chord up and down, and he got a little riff out of it.
You know the most impressive thing about that story,
what,
Paul, is that he knew what the tuning was in the painting.
That's very true. We never really got to the bottom of that. We should recall all these albums. But he played this riff and he whistled over it and recorded it, and then it sort of just went into the archive. It became this track, When the Wind is Blowing. And then cut to, 7 or 8 years ago, he's sitting with Kanye West, and Kanye West is running a tape recording everything Paul is doing for a day, and Paul is telling him either a version of this story, or he's playing this two-finger guitar whistle riff. And 6 months later, Kanye sends him the song All Day, which is not the same as When the Wind is Blowing. It is 100 miles in the opposite direction in terms of some of the language on it, Stephen.
That's why I can't listen to it.
It's just, you couldn't listen on a Sunday, that's for one thing. You know, it's just absolutely terrible stuff. So I know we don't usually do sound clips on this podcast, but to actually put the two songs side by side, When the Wind is Blowing, and actually to hear how Kanye rips that off. Well, not rips it off. He credits Paul. He copies it over into One Day. All Day. And then at the end of All Day, Paul turns up himself, whistling and singing a little rappy song. It's well worth seeking out. And then the last thing that's on the music side of Wildlife is Give Ireland Back to the Irish. Shall we talk about that for half an hour?
Happy to talk about that for half an hour. This is a very half-hearted protest song.
It's a song that has kind of disappeared. I mean, it happened fast, and you could argue that it shouldn't be on the Wildlife reissue at all, since it's a song that was written the day after the Bloody Sunday massacres and recorded the day after that, and then released probably about a week later.
Yeah. So this is a sort of Lennon approach.
Yes.
To the you know, and Lennon has his own protest songs that arising out of the Bloody Sunday incident, but this is him very much, you know, I'm going to write this protest song, I'm going to get it out. It's a kind of reportage.
Yes.
There's clearly something he felt very deeply about.
He'd actually been in New York City with Lennon on the 29th of January.
Yeah.
They'd been hanging out the day before all this happened.
And it's interesting to compare the two songs.
Yeah.
So
Look at the Irish.
There's actually a song called, I think it's called Sunday Bloody Sunday.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Which is a fantastic song. Mm. It's a lyrically very powerful song. Musically, it's incredibly powerful. I don't doubt that both men felt very strongly about what had happened. Mm. Their reaction is to write a song, and Paul comes up with a kind of slightly twee, half-hearted.
Yeah,
you know,
trying to be reasonable. Great Britain, you are tremendous.
Yeah, you know, it's just such a half-hearted attempt to write a song about something that he clearly felt much more viscerally about.
Yes.
Through the Paul McCartney filter, it just comes out as something slightly twee, and there's a little twee interlude in the middle.
It's not a very melodically exciting song by Paul McCartney standards.
And is it kind of like a reggae? Has it got a little bit of a reggae lilt to it?
I read about this that as it turns out, it ends up being the first Wings single. So the album comes out December 71, and they record Give Ireland Back to the Irish in February 72 and release it. And he put on the B-side an instrumental version of Give Ireland Back to the Irish because he didn't want DJs to flip the record. He wanted them to confront the situation because Paul likes to get things done, you know. And
that's why he's the best
why he's the best one. But the B-side, I didn't appreciate this until I was reading up about this. I always wondered why it sounded a bit crummy. And it's mixed to sound like a reggae dub B-side. Although with kind of a diddly-diddly guitar motif strange.
He invented Irish reggae.
Yes.
Is what we were saying.
And it's the first and last single in that genre.
Is there anything this man cannot do?
Yes. Mashed potatoes, if you've seen YouTube. It's a single that, it got to number one in Ireland, which is quite weird. But it doesn't carry. It doesn't remain. And it's not in the popular consciousness. Nobody. It's kind of been swept under the rug.
And I have to say, it doesn't fit.
Yes,
It does not fit with Wildlife.
Does it fit with anything? Though?
No. I think it is a kind of orphan single.
And I think they've put it on the very end of this box set because they don't want to address it in the Red Rose Speedway box set, the next one, which we'll talk about in a sec. But they don't want it to be part of that. And they're saying, well, look, it belongs to this automatic writing, automatic recording debut style of the album. We'll just stick it on here and just leave it here and be done with it. And so plowing into the box a bit more, there's an interesting DVD with a couple of bits and pieces. There's a nice bit of black and white footage of Wings rehearsing in the ICA in early 72, February 72. They're rehearsing, and also some great footage from the 1st of February 72. And it seems to be in Paul's house in Cavendish Avenue recording, rehearsing Give Ireland Back to the Irish before they obviously go across the road to Abbey Road to record it. And I don't know if you haven't watched all that DVD.
No,
have you?
I haven't watched. I know.
And there's
my dislike of wildlife has held me back.
Well, I know. There's an interesting 5-minute footage of the from November 1971 of the wildlife launch party in Leicester Square, and it actually seems totally at odds with the whole feel and vibe of the album. This sort of getting back in the country, spontaneous thing, and there's all the glamorous and the good of 1971 rock aristocracy rocking up in their finery to this album launch.
This is where Paul turned up in the unfinished suit.
Is that right?
Yeah. You know that story?
He
had a suit specially commissioned for this launch party. He went to pick it up from the tailor and it wasn't ready.
Right.
So it still had the sort of big white
stitching.
So he just went, that's really cool. I'll just wear that. And he turned up with this unfinished.
Well, that's a metaphor for the record.
You beat me to it. You beat me to it. But yeah, you're right. He's at this point, he's kind of, the glam thing is going on. So this album is completely out of step with what's going on. The other bit of information I read somewhere was that he and Linda hand wrote.
Yes.
The 600-800 invitations to this party. So he was kind of desperate for attention.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because inside this wildlife box set there's a bunch of, depending on what your view is, faithfully reproduced documents of the time / tat that represents what was going on. With the invite to the party, there's also a very accurately reproduced copybook which has scrawled lyrics and sort of has a diary of the tour that they're about to undertake in February 1972, and also his working lyrics to Live and Let Die, which, can I read them for you now?
Please do.
When you were young and your heart was an open home, you used to say, live and don't moan. So I think we missed a bullet there.
Words to live your life by.
So you have the you have all these kind of things. There's also a bunch of very nicely reproduced photographs and a handwritten list by Paul of about 40 media outlets that he wants to communicate the press release to Give Ireland Back to the Irish about, which is, it's just interesting to see how his mind works. But physically, it's a very nice box. I mean, but it doesn't seem to have changed your mind on wildlife to any stretch. I mean, I was quite happy that one of my favourite albums was being celebrated in a box set in a way that it absolutely deserved.
What I will say is, having listened to your splendid defence of the album, I will go back and I will listen to it one more time and then put the box on the shelf and never listen to it or speak of it again.
That's all we can ask is that if people can do that, if that podcast draws people towards wildlife,
I think if it's an album that, you know, I came to the album very much with the reputation in my mind. This is a terrible album. This is his worst album. Over the years, I rarely listened to it. I did listen to it when this reissue came out. I will concede there are two and a half songs I might pull off the album to put on a best of Paul McCartney. But I think it would be better as a bonus disc for perhaps for Red Rose Speedway.
So before we get on to Red Rose Speedway, there's a thing sandwiched in between Wildlife and Red Rose Speedway in the 71 to 73 box, which is the Wings Over Europe live album. And it's a single live CD with a very nice photo book and a reproduced program from the time.
And only available in the hugely expensive.
Yes, 360 quid. Not available as any kind of standalone issue.
Yet.
Although, I keep expecting it to turn up at one of these record store day type things or to turn up on vinyl. But that's a great live album.
It is a great live album.
And, you know, in 1972, Wings, once again, you know, we've touched upon this before, Paul has this thing of printing the legend of, you know, he sort of sells up things. And one of the things he always talks about when he talks about Wings and Wings Starting was, we went off on a university tour. I'm not going to do the voice.
I've said it before. It's like having him in the room.
He sort of sells this thing of, you know, well, we went off and we got in a van and we drove around the country and we turned up at universities and we just played for the people there. And he sort of sets this up as some massive, mighty undertaking.
Yep.
And the Wings University tour of February 72 was 2 weeks. He was in the van for 2 weeks.
11 gigs
in 2 weeks. It's got that touch of, you know, Pulp's Common People. If he called his dad, he could stop it all. You know, that's but he gives him the license to say, we were a good little band and we went in a van and we went up and down. And open brackets for 2 weeks.
This is the thing. He's trying to get back to that kind of Beatles early days camaraderie driving up and down the well, I was going to say the motorway. There probably weren't any motorways, but the back of the van vibe.
Why is he making life so hard for himself?
But he's condensing that.
Yeah. You know,
what took the Beatles 5-6 years to build up? He's trying to do that in 2 weeks, 11 gigs.
Yeah.
But what I will say is the live album is great.
It is great.
And that just reinforces my view that, you know, Wildlife is the rehearsal.
Yeah.
It's a taped rehearsal for the band.
Yep.
The live album is pretty good.
Yeah, the versions of Mumbo and Bebop, they take off.
They're all better. They're both better than what's on the album.
Yes.
So perhaps if they'd recorded that after they cemented the relationship in the back of the van doing the 11 gigs, it would have been a more cohesive album.
Yeah. And the other tour he did that year was the Wings Over Europe tour. And that's actually where these recordings come from, which is 6 weeks in July, August 1972. A bit of a longer tour, but again, setting himself up in this kind of open-top bus and driving around and almost trying to... I kind of feel from that he's trying to make sense of what's happening by doing these kind of things.
He is trying to recreate the band. Now, I give him credit for starting a band.
Yes.
You know, John doesn't bother starting a band. He's working in the studio with Imagine. He's got session players. He's got Nicky Hopkins. He's got George. He's got Ringo on Plastic Ono Band. He goes to America and he picks up a kind of journeyman band, Elephant's Memory, who were really, they were a band, but they were pretty much session men.
Yeah.
You know, George is doing the same. He's working with Billy Preston and Jim Keltner, and he's surrounding himself by sort of people you know, session guys, guys for hire. McCartney, I'll give him that. He goes back to basics. He tries to start a band.
Yes.
But if you're in a band with Paul McCartney, you're always going to be in a band with Paul McCartney.
Oh, absolutely.
It's Paul McCartney's band. And he's kind of fooling himself, I think, that he's what he's trying to do. And I mean, and the
But open it's the McCartney paradox, isn't it? He's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't.
Yeah.
You know? And I do think that John and George and Ringo are, you know, they've got that kind of dry session studio sound to all those kind of 70s records. And Paul, in his defense, is, even if you might say it's not true, it can't be true because of who he is, at least he is pretending to be true, or he believes it to be true himself.
He's trying to will something into existence.
Yes.
I think that's really what he's doing. And you know, the same 11 dates in the UK, then he takes, as you say, an open top bus that is all tricked out with a Wings livery. And you know, Denny Sywell and Denny Lane, they talk about that, and they said this bus traveled at 35 miles an hour. You know, so
not the most efficient way
he's around. Driving around Europe at 35 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know, he might as well have Unistubbs and Cliff Richard on the bus. You know, it's not real.
Yes.
It's not real, Paul.
Yes.
It's not real.
But none of it's nothing is real.
Nothing is real.
Huh? See what I did there?
You know, he if he's gonna tour,
yes.
And the other three aren't doing this.
Yeah.
He just needs to kind of embrace the fact that he's Paul McCartney, he's a superstar, he can get a jet, he's got the money.
But that's what he's doing now.
That's what he's doing now. Yeah, fine. But he's pretending to be something he isn't. He clearly just wants to be the bass player in the band, and he's never going to be that.
But any contemporaneous footage to that time, it's, you know, people are asking Denny Lane, sure, why are you in this band, and what's it like being in Paul's band, and it all just falls apart when you start to interrogate it. Really,
yeah, it's never going to be. You know, it's never going to be a band of equals.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's the same issue. That at the end of the Beatles, McCartney had a certain view of the way things were going.
Yep.
This is the band that he wanted the Beatles to be.
Yeah. He's fulfilling his Get Back fantasy.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that bus has been found. The livery bust has been found.
Right.
We don't know who owns it. There's people online think it was found in, I think, Spain, in a field in Spain a year or two ago. And it was transported back to England. And there's rumours that McCartney has bought it. But nobody knows for sure.
So you're telling me they just abandoned this bus?
They just abandoned this bus.
It's not environmentally friendly.
Denny Seawell was hiding in the boot or any of that kind of stuff. But it's not very environmentally friendly. But interestingly, the livery of the bus is the livery on the outside of this box set. And in the run-up, when people were wondering whether Paul was going to release this box set or not, Paul was playing gigs all throughout summer 2018 with this livery on his piano, and nobody twigged
up
what was going on.
This has been Nothing Is Real. You can follow us in the usual places. Look for us on Facebook. We're on Twitter on @BeatlesPod. My name's Jason Carty.
My name's Stephen Cockcroft.
And we'll talk to you next time, part two of Wing 7173.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening to Nothing Is Real. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, why not become a member? You'll get access to ad-free content, bonus episodes, and so much more. Follow the link in the show notes, sign up on Acast Plus, or visit our website, nothingisrealpod.com.